So I'm Ben Gaster. I work at AMD, and I'm here to learn more about C++.
How do you use the language typically?
Typically, I use it around templates and those features. I'm not a huge object user. I mean, you know, I have quite shallow hierarchies and everything. I'm not hugely into the abstraction per se of object-oriented programming.
Okay.
Whereas things like templates and some of the security benefits you get from C++, that would be my most common use cases.
Interesting. Now, what do you think about sort of templates in general? What do you think about template metaprogramming?
I like template metaprogramming. I think the syntax could have been thought of a bit better, you know, in previous, but that's where we are today. Uh-huh. But in generally, my background is in functional programming, and so the kind of recursive side of templates I don't mind. I found that reasonably easily going. They obviously can be quite esoteric if you get carried away with them, and I think that's great. It's great to be able to think, oh, I'm so great, I can do fancy metaprogramming and no one else can understand me in the world. But of course, that only works until you have to give your code to somebody else. And generally, you know, the company pay me to write code that I give to someone else.
Absolutely.
And so it's not as useful as you might think in all cases.
Now, since you're a practicing, full-time practicing developer, when we learn like the template samples, right, class T, type name T, mm-hmm. Do you actually give more meaningful names to your parameters?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So all parameters, variables, everything should have meaningful names, and there shouldn't be awful Hungarian notation either. So, yeah, I give my name full names,
Excellent.
Quite long names.
Cool, because I've been seeing a mishmash of that style, and I could see for debugging it would be really complex.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we kind of had a conversation with someone last night about that. It's a really good point to help with debugging.
Yeah, and anyway, if you're just looking down a code, and you get halfway down, you can't see the definition, you're going to want to have some idea about what I might use it for, mightn't you? So I
Absolutely.
Think that's very important.
So now a lot of interesting things have been discussed here over the past 3 days. What, in your mind, sort of has stood out as sort of like, wow, that's really interesting, I didn't think about it that way?
That's a good question. So variadic templates, I hadn't looked at that much beforehand, to be honest, because I mostly use Visual Studio and you don't have them yet.
Ah.
And so I played around a bit, but since I saw the talk on Monday from Andre using Visual GCC, mm-hmm. and they're nice. The syntax is really not so nice, but then I suppose that's continuing the spirit of templates. So so that was pretty good. But as a feature, I think it's about time. You know, something in a long time. My most desirable feature mm-hmm. is probably, memory model aside, because I think that's probably the most important thing, is the using the template aliasing.
Yes.
And so it's very sad that no one implements that yet. So I think that's one of the, you know, I have to say from an everyday practical programming person, just using templates a little bit, you know, without doing fancy metaprogramming, being able to alias a template is so important.
Excellent.
Yeah, you know.
Agreed.
Going back to your readability and debugging.
We also learned a lot about sort of modern C++, or what hopefully today will be C++ 11 finally.
Let's hope so.
What are some of the features that you actually use in your day-to-day life?
Oh, okay, so that's a good question. So our value references are probably the most important one that we've got. I think they're very useful. Although, as some of the talks to say, you can imagine it's going to be easy to overuse them, you know, and kind of I suspect that will be. And I expect I'll be as much a culprit to that than anyone else, because it's easy to get carried away with using those things. So those, and lambdas. So I really, really like lambdas. Again, I come from a functional programming background. And so lambdas, of course, we've had those since 1938, I think, maybe. So they've been around a long time. They're not something new. However, it turns out that lambdas can't be overloaded. They're not polymorphic. And so it's not clear to me quite how useful they're going to be. And as they're quite a verbose syntax for something which really is only for using for simple expressions and maybe partly complex functions, it's not completely sure how useful they'll be in large industrial products, you know.
Interesting.
And, I don't have that from experience yet. We'll find out.
Sure.
But it's certainly a limitation, I think. And it's frustrating that lambdas don't have types. You know, they have this kind of anonymous type, but you can't look inside it, but that's slightly frustrating.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. So I think that will be, you know, because that comes down to the issue of being able to overload and being able to break the part type apart and use it in template expressions and things like that.
Mm.
And then the other thing is decal type. So
yes.
Decal type is critical. I'm not a fan of the auto.
You're not?
No, because, so Scott said it in one of his talks. He said, I'm just going to put auto all over my code. Is that really going to be that helpful? It's a bit like saying when we talked about, long variable names or type names.
Yes.
If I now just put auto everywhere, I don't have any documentation about what that name is. I have to look at the right-hand side to deduce the type from that as I'm looking as a documentation. So it would definitely be useful, I think, you know, for iterators, mm-hmm. a stupid thing where you had to put, you know, v.b for begin to get the vector. Yeah, absolutely. Those sort of things would be great, but...
But in some sense, what if you, you know, one of the use cases for them obviously will be, as you know, being a template kind of guy and whatnot, I mean, you have super long type names.
Yep.
And that's a burden to write, even if you're using a modern IDE. So auto can help in that way, because in some sense, but I understand auto everywhere.
Yeah. So I completely, so don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I'll never use auto. Actually, yeah. I've got code that I already use auto in. My problem is that we'll abuse it. You know, people will just stick it everywhere. And when people say, I'm just going to stick all over my code, and, you know, I don't know how useful that will actually be.
Sure.
Know. But maybe that's just a coding standards issue. You know, you'll put, yeah.
Like, what do you think of C++ AMP? I mean...
C++ AMP is great, actually. I really like it. No, I think it's a good step. It's a really good step in the right direction where we need to go. And the reason being, I don't see it as a competitor to OpenCL. And the reason that being is, for me, OpenCL is a very low-level API designed for things like AMP to be implemented on top of. Mm. You know, and it's quite feasible to imagine a compiler that generated OpenCL code from AMP code, you know, completely indivisible from the user. And, of course, the Microsoft implementation will do that, but for DirectX.
Sure.
So it's the exact same analogy, except, you know, OpenCL has more features than DirectX, so you may choose, if you're using a different platform, to use OpenCL rather than DirectX as your target. And, of course, it's not supported on all platforms.
Sure.
So I think that's definitely good, but the idea of integrating it into a higher-level language, integrating it from your perspective, you know, from the Microsoft perspective, being in PPL, which I also like a lot, I think that's just great, you know. And if we can standardize AMP in the same way that PPL is now available via TBB and things like that across platforms, I think that's only a good thing,
sure.
you know, for the industry. And hopefully at least more C++ programmers will start to do GPU programming.
Absolutely.
Which from my perspective of being at AMD is only a good thing.
So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that, because with the one of the promises of general purpose computing on a GPU is that you can blast through large sets of data mm-hmm. very efficiently in parallel on, you know, 1,000 cores, for example. But you have to get the data to that memory. And so the bus will be a constraint.
So I'd never use the 10,000 cores. I don't believe GPUs have that. I have to say that because I always make that point.
Okay.
They have, you know.
100.
Exactly. Let's put in those sort of numbers, not, you know, 20
okay.
maybe.
Sorry.
Say.
Okay.
No, sorry. People, I think that, you know, depending on how you look at it, but for me, you know, GPUs have 20, 30 cores, and then they have lots of ALU units on them. But anyway, that aside, I think that, well, we're already seeing that progression. We're seeing it with AMD's, what we call our APUs, so for our Llano core, for example, where we have the GPU and the CPU fused onto the same core, they share the same system memory. And you're seeing it with Intel's Sandy Bridge cores, and you know, where they've done exactly the same thing, slightly different GPUs, but the same idea, you know. Okay. And you know, they're making different trade-offs. I think, you know, the way they use L3 might be different to the way that we share L3 and things like that, you know. So I think, and they're in the design space, and of course okay. that's what makes it interesting over time, because otherwise we'd just be exactly the same, the two companies, and that wouldn't be that interesting. So I think we're definitely going to see differences in the design space, but what we are going to see is a trend to GPUs and CPUs coupled closer together, and that will mean, you know, reduced latency, not just in memory transfers, but actually in the dispatch latency. So it's interesting if you think about, I want to launch a kernel, as they're called in these languages, and you have to build a packet. You don't have to send that packet across the PCIe bus and then execute. So even if your data was just magically on the GPU, you'd still have to pay the cost of PCIe startup to get that. Mm. And all of those things will start to disappear as we merge them onto a die. And of course, they're just the sort of things we might optimize too. So.
Excellent. So one of the other things that was talked about in this conversation was sort of the GPUs in the cloud. What went through your mind when you sort of heard about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So I know less about that. Of course, I mean, okay. I'm aware of the kind of the hype around the Amazon NVIDIA deal with the GPU in the cloud, and definitely, you know, GPUs are really good at accelerating certain types of applications. They're particularly good at accelerating things that have lots of data.
Sure.
The perspective, as I understand it, in the cloud, there's going to be lots of data, so that they seem inherently to be in the right space. I think GPUs probably have still got a way to go in terms of virtualization support and the kind of characteristics and things that you need in the cloud. But once those issues are resolved, which, you know, they're going to be, I think we can all take that for, you know, a given, then I think it's a very interesting proposition. And of course, they don't need to be separated on discrete GPUs. Once you've got them merged, you just have one chip, and then the system becomes much more integrated and starts to really look much more like the program model that we're already used to. We just happen to have more, I'll call them work items rather than threads because I think they can be confusing, but we have more things running concurrently.
Excellent.
You know, yeah.
Excellent. So, you know, talking a little bit more about this event, which is C++ and Beyond. Mm-hmm. Is your first time here?
It is my first time here, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's been very interesting, and I somehow would have liked it to have been a little bit more advanced.
More advanced?
You know, so, yeah, and some of the detailed discussions, you know. But I suppose that's just my, you know, my experience.
What did Andre say again today?
So Andre's talk was great. His policy stuff is getting, you know, that's the limits of template programming, certainly the limits of my mind, so I'm quite happy with that.
But, yeah, very adequate.
But I think it's, and it's not really that, I think it's pretty just a personal choice, you know,
sure.
Interest, you know, what I prefer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
But plus, overall, it's been great.
Great.
Yeah.
So what's missing from C++ in your mind? Like, what would you like to see these guys work on for the, hopefully, C++ 11.5? I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take to iterate on this stuff, but...
Yeah, polymorphic lambdas.
Polymorphic lambdas.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. That would be my number one request.
Number one request?
Yeah.
Right on. And I know other people have asked Herb about that specifically.
Yeah.
Great. Do you like the lambda syntax that they chose coming from functional programming?
It's just syntax. I have
Fair
to be
enough.
Honest. A lot of people have said it's a little bit verbose.
Mm.
And I think if you wanted to write a lambda which was just returning x plus y, absolutely, I think it probably is. But to be honest, my interest in lambdas is not really to write reply x plus y. You know, we've been able to do that with the Boost libraries for a while. It's more just being integrated into the language, sharing, you know, integrated into the type system, which is kind of what it's missing at the moment. And that would be really great.
When the industry was pushing hard on Java and .NET, sort of like the promise of managed code being everywhere, what was going through your mind? And what do you think of this notion of a C++ renaissance?
I hoped it was going to succeed.
Okay.
I hope .NET, you know, to be honest, I think, you know, everyone says, oh, you know, we should only program the memory ordinance with sequentially consistent atomics, let's take an analogy. Then, you know, why should I ever want to do delete? Why should I need to track that? You know, the problem is that we don't know how to do it efficiently yet.
Sure.
You know, and in a parallel world, it becomes even more difficult. Garbage collection, parallel, you know, if we could resolve that issue, I think most applications and most, even libraries, you could argue should be written in the managed environment. I don't know if we can, though I don't have an answer to it. It's still a research question as far as
sure.
I can tell. The interesting thing is one that the language that Andrea works on is the, you know, the D,
yes.
The D language, which
yes.
Notably, by default, is managed. And so I haven't played a bit, but I'm definitely going to. I found
Excellent.
That very interesting.
Yeah, I want to talk to Andre about that. Interesting he didn't give a talk about it. But
yeah, no. I will say one thing. Syntactically and as a language specification, Java, I'm not a big fan of.
Okay.
But that's more of a... That's nothing to do with being managed. It's just I don't like the fact that everything's a class and
sure.
things, but that's just...
Well, you said you're not really a big OO guy.
Exactly. Yeah, so maybe that's it. Maybe you hit the nail on the head, yeah.
Right on,
that's
man.
That's right.
Well, hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
You're welcome. No, thanks.
And this will be on Channel 9.
Great.
Is that cool with you?
No, perfect.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks.